yourself, I believe you.
You don't have to believe
me. So how many people leave from the community? Because I have three friends, actually, who left yeshiva in Israel and are very happy. They're like DJs. They started this whole world.
They're just saying so.
Are you sure? Because 100%. One of them is dating this beautiful girl. He's like killing it all over the world, making tons of money, traveling, living the best life.
I promise he's not happy.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Can we call him? His name is Zev. Let's call him and see if he's happy.
Put him on.
Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live till the end of time.
But he loves you.
And he needs money. He always needs money.
You don't see my point. You never like once were like, enough with this hat and this, you know, I'd like to shave my beard and like...
No, I'm very comfortable.
All right, fair enough.
I understand your point also.
You must have like tons of kids. And don't they want to take it off?
No. They're very happy. No. They're used to it and they're happy.
Don't they watch TV and stuff?
No.
Oh, they don't watch any TV?
No.
You just keep them in a little box. They don't know
not
any...
Not a little box, but... Normal.
Well, to be honest, the Hasidic community is kind of a little box. You don't really leave the box.
They don't need it. They're very happy.
Is it about being happy? Don't you just want to be like curious and explore the world? Or
no, but that doesn't make any person happy.
You don't think so?
I know so.
You know so?
Yes. Because I have a couple of friends that did it and they're not happy.
Who left the community.
Yes, they're very not happy. They want to come back.
You obviously listened to the episode. You've heard what our fellow High Misha, whatever the fuck, Hasid man had to say. There is no one better than you, I think, who has a better mind and who has lived it and lived both sides to be a very discerning and accurate representation of A, the religion itself, and B, what it would be like to leave the cult and see how it, you know, and see how you fare.
I don't know that he's lying necessarily, because if you grow up as a peasant in the field, you know, in Thailand, you can attain happiness because you just don't know any better, that there's other things out there, or you can still maintain or be a happy person within the framework of the religion, even if you do know that there's more things out there. So I don't know that he's lying about being happy, but definitely people who leave the religion, they weren't happy there and they left and then they became happy.
So the answer is yes, Zev, you are happy.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled from the first day I left the religion till today. I would never, ever, ever, ever go back to it. Most of my friends who left are also happy. It's kind of falling apart on its own. It's beautiful.
Now, I wanted to ask you, because he said that you could come back without repercussion. Is that true? Do they, like, welcome you back with loving arms?
It's true. And it's true, and not only that, but you kind of, if you play your cards right, you can get this kind of celebrity status, because they thought they lost you, but now you came back, and you have all this wisdom to share from the outside world. You could sit around and say, like, well, I went out there and saw it, and I still came back, you know? The girls are a different story, Zoe. But the guys can come back.
Why? What would happen to a girl?
Well, I think the girls, you know, there would probably be a little bit of this, like, oh, well, who knows what she did out there.
She was like, sucking all kinds of uncircumcised cock covered in cheeseburgers.
Exactly.
Fucking black dudes wrapping it in bacon.
That's what they assume is going on out there. But I also want to tell you, There's also a difference between the Hasidic that I came from and that gentleman in the taxi with you. I grew up in Crown Heights, which is 5 miles, so, and we had a slightly different, you know, different kind of system, different kind of rules. But what's really funny is my dad's been telling me that these Satmar kids, which is the sect that this guy comes from, that they're going batshit crazy. They're like, there's a lot of them leaving, and they're leaving with like with a vengeance. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, what's changed? The internet? Do you think technology helped them see other stuff they wanted to explore?
I think the internet changed. I think that if you look at all the religions, they're all experiencing this decline. Maybe just the global consciousness that's sweeping everyone up. You know, it's not just Judaism that's losing people. Every religion is. And the only difference with Judaism is that they have so many kids that it doesn't even matter. You know,
they can afford to lose a few.
And they're not getting them back. Even look at my family. There's 8 of us. You know, so 4 of us. I'd say 3.5 of us are out of the religion now, and it doesn't matter because the other 4. Each of them had 4 kids already.
Jesus Christ.
We're almost an afterthought at this point.
Can you explain to me how much of a bubble it really is? Like, you know, when he says he doesn't know Seinfeld, like, how segregated and isolated are these communities?
That is absolutely possible. I don't know so many cultural references. My partners in Crew Love Soul Clap constantly make fun of me and Gotti for not knowing the most basic pop culture references from our time. I don't know music, I don't know anything, and that's just because we didn't have the TV, the constant source of information. We weren't allowed to listen to radio. And so, you know, if you imagine taking that out, where is it that you learn things from, you know? So yeah, they're definitely in a bubble. I think the internet has really, really changed that because they basically have these kosher ISPs or kosher internet service companies, and basically they give you internet and it already comes like pre-filtered. And
Jesus.
I'll tell you something even funnier. So there's a community in New Jersey called Lakewood, and that's like a really super Orthodox. It's not Hasidic, but it's this type of Orthodox that's as crazy as the Hasidic people are. So they banned the internet entirely, right? And but obviously, people need the internet for work these days. And the way these communities work is they have a tremendous amount of power that they exert on the community because they control the schools. So everyone goes to private school. All Hasidic and religious kids go to private school. And so if they want to impose some draconian rule like, fuck you, no internet, right? How are you going to control that? And they do this by sending out a letter to the parents that if we find out that a child's home has internet, we don't want them in the school corrupting the rest of the kids. So anyway, they came up with this rule, no internet. Then there was like a big uproar because people said, well, you know, it's our livelihood. We need to get on the internet. So they invented this buddy system. This is going to blow your mind. Basically, what you do is you pick someone that you, you know, like a study partner or some. We're talking about grown men. Okay, we're talking about 40-year-old fucking men getting a buddy. And the point is that the buddy, I guess, I'm not exactly sure how it works. Maybe they see it real time, or maybe they get a transcript of everything that you did, like peer-to-peer.
Do you think that if they didn't have a buddy and they were alone on the internet, would they be, and they were looking at porn, do you think that the Hasids would go for the fake frum, you know, Hasid on Hasid porn, or do you think they would go for like bang bus and MILFs and like college wet t-shirt contest porn? Like everybody starts
they
off.
They would go for some crazy tranny shit, probably.
Yeah,
but no, that Hasidic porn is not for Hasidic people. That's for people like you.
Oh.
It's not for people in the community. They would know that it's fake in a minute. No, they'll go for that. But you know what? What's interesting is I don't really think that porn is really the big thing that they're afraid of. The worst thing for them is corruption of their system. And corruption of their system, as you know from any other country, that you know, like from North Korea, what are the South Koreans trying to do? They're trying to send them media of, you know, not of extremism, just like what is the normal life in a day of a South Korean? because that's more powerful than any propaganda. People can relate to it and say, oh my God, look how cool everyone else is like. I'm out of here, you know? They're really afraid of people just seeing more and more that they're missing a lot from their life. And they have a good answer for everything you ask them. They're really missing a lot.
What exactly is it besides just with the huge thing of choice, you know, just to choose to live your life as you please and to love who you want? What do you think are the main things that they're missing by being in the religion like that?
So the big thing is they have a tremendous amount of stress in their life. And from the perspective of the female, they are impregnated at 18 and a half years old and continuously impregnated until they're 26 or 27. And then they basically have to run this family and they have no say in any of it, you know? And that's just not fair, you know? And I'm sure a lot of them do a bang up job of being a factory mom, but a lot of them probably would have made different choices and they're not given that choice. And by being a mother of 8 children, you know, you don't have a lot of other things you can do with your life. So they're basically missing anything else that they would want to do besides being a mother of 8 children. And then from the male perspective, they're born in New York or they're born in America, but they have a fifth grade education. You know, English is their second language, and they have to provide for 8 children. And they have to provide for private school. They have to provide for kosher food. They have to provide for, you know, all the things, all the trappings of being an Orthodox Jew. And it is extremely stressful. You know, like, what do me and you have to make money for, right? Come on, Zoe.
Seeing as grooming and medical bills.
There you go.
Expensive wine. I need to put purple and pink in my hair a lot.
Is that cheap?
No, not cheap. Electrolysis to remove all the Jew hair that I inherited from all my Ashkenazi fucking inbred cousin married grandparents.
It's a really tough and stressful life, and none of them are given an option about it. They're forced into it by their community. And then, you know what's funny? Another thing that this guy brought up, or I can't remember if he brought it up, but this is like a really common kind of, you know, thing where they're like, oh, you know, but the community is so charitable. Like, where else do you see that? Where they all take care of each other and like... You know, and like, the answer to that is, first of all, okay, so you have a whole inbred community, and there's a lot of, you know, children with special needs, so you take care of the children with special needs because they're all inbred. Like, great. That, you know what I'm saying? Or like, okay, so you raise a whole community with a fifth grade education, and then you give them a job. Like, it's like chopping off someone's legs and giving them crutches and thinking you're a fucking hero, you know? So that's just another part of this community. They're like... caught up with themselves, like they're all slapping each other on the back for being so supportive of each other, but then you know, they're the ones that are causing all the problems that require the support, you know.
But okay, so for instance, I met a Hasidic woman a long time ago who had just lost 3 of her kids and her husband to cancer, and she was at synagogue. Wow. She was like walking to synagogue and she was crying. I stopped to talk with her. And at the end of it, I asked her, like, how could she believe in God still? And she said to me, dead in the eyes, because if I didn't believe in him, I would have nothing left.
And I've heard that before, and I believe it.
I know that you're happy now, but what was the good part of believing in that kind of God is there for you? Do you miss that feeling of believing that there's a calling for you and that God is looking out for you and will protect you and guide you and have fate in that way?
I'm not the best person to ask that particular question because, truthfully, I never fucking believed in it. Really, from my earliest memory of consciousness, I remember looking around my classroom in the Talmud class and just thinking to myself at 8 years old, like, these people are fucking crazy.
But
like,
what? How? How did you know? Like, I know
because
you're brilliant, but how did you know?
I'm lucky. I guess I just... You know, because it was stupid.
No, Zev, it's not.
Dumb.
No,
it was
you.
Like the...
You have a different kind of, like, either a different kind of genetic code, different kind of brain pathways, or you learned at an early age how to be discerning. You had a bullshit barometer that no one else had. So
right.
How? Why? Why do you think you're the chosen one? And to get the Matrix
neck. I think it's just because the universe had shit for me to do. And
oh, you mean like make
it.
Techno parties?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you something. I wake up in the morning and I don't really have much of a question of what the fuck to do with my life. Not that what I'm doing is, like, so important, but I don't really have this kind of struggle, like, oh, what do I want to do? What do I want to be? I never did. I always just knew what I wanted to do, and I feel like that is, you know, just like, I guess, like a tree kind of knows what it's supposed to do, you know? Well, I'm only saying that because I'm seeing a tree
outside
my window.
You're useless, though. Okay, fine. Here's the question, then. How, if we could be a subversive movement somehow to get this kind of, you know, wording to kids who are in these kinds of situations without a lot of hope or access, you know, who are thinking the same things as you, as this is bullshit and I hate it. I mean, what would you say to, you know, somebody else in your situation who didn't have the cojones or didn't have the power or the, you know, who couldn't leave? Like, what would you say to them?
I think it's very easy to leave now. It's not difficult to leave. Anyone who wants to leave can leave at this point. There's not really a whole lot of challenge anymore.
That's not true. You lose everything. You lose your community. You lose your family. You lose your faith. You lose everything.
Right. You're right about that. The other thing is about family. My family was very warm and very close and very supportive of each other. And I'm still close to everyone in my family. And they're wonderful people. But again, that's not a Jewish thing. And I think it's important to always distinguish that when people are asking, you know, what's specifically unique about Judaism? It's not unique about Judaism. It's just about being a human being, you know?
But when you left the community and you had your first experience with a woman outside of the community, what was that like? Was it like being on Mars?
I think it was just clunky and awkward like anyone else. I don't think it was any more special.
It must have been very strange for you to be with women who you didn't have to marry and had no hang-ups and would, like, suck your dick.
It was pretty incredible. I mean, and actually, I'm kind of remembering now, like, it's funny because you're reminding me of, like, probably one of the first girls I ever was with, and I picked her up at Twilo, and it was me and two of my Hasidic friends, and I brought her back to our house in Crown Heights, and I was just like, this is it. You went out to a club, you found a shiksa, and you brought her home. Later that night, I was like standing in front of the house with this shiksa who looked like a real shiksa. She was wearing like tight pants, still all messy from the club, you know? The rabbi, and he had this assistant, this rabbi called Rabbi Groner. And this guy was just like a permanent fixture near the rabbi. He was always with the rabbi, and like, I just remember seeing the rabbi when I was younger. The big rabbi, you know, everyone was like hushed around him, and this, you know, everyone would come and get a dollar from the rabbi. It was like a charity thing or whatever. And this guy was like, would like hustle everyone, like, ah, keep on moving, you know, like this old fart. And then I was standing outside after this momentous experience. Rabbi Groner, so he was walking down President Street, and he like kind of slows down in front of me and this girl, and looks at her. Like looks her up and down and looks at me and is just like so disgusted, and he just goes like and he walks on, and that's what really, you know what I'm saying, like I thought I couldn't top the experience you know, picking up a shiksa, but then having like the rabbi's main man look at me disapprovingly was just like, that was the top of it. That was like, you know,
you climbed the mountain. I feel like people don't know anything about Orthodox Judaism at all. Is there any way to, like, sum up for people sort of, like, where they come from, what they believe in, and, like, sort of, like, some bullet points?
I know everything about Hasidic
people. Oh, great. Okay, so can you, yeah, give me a little history.
For hours on it, but, I mean, the brief bullet points are that Orthodox Jews are basically Jews who try to follow the letter of the law and essentially make their entire existence about being a Jew. It was this hotbed of people, each person trying to make up more stupid rules to follow so that they can prove to their fellow people, well, I take this Judaism more seriously than you do. So if you go back to about the 1600s and the 1700s, there was this guy that went around and took this serious Judaism and softened it up and made it available to the people. It's really interesting, but at the time that this was going on, the regular Jews were freaking out. Because they looked at this guy and the way that he was changing the way that they practiced Judaism, as a Jesus Christ kind of situation. So that's the origins of Hasidism. But over the last 250 years or so, like any movement that's based on these kinds of rules, the Hasidic people started this arms race of being more and more conservative, and they ended up becoming more conservative than the people that they split off from 250 years ago. And the way that they dress and all that silly shit that they wear is basically, it's not actually Jewish garb, it's actually just, you know, 1700 Polish and Russian peasant garb.
What is the difference between all the hats? The beaver hat, what does it all mean?
Each town basically elected, you know, or each group of these people made someone their new rabbi. And obviously those numbers grew and grew. And then when they came to America, they stayed separate. So Satmar, which is the sect that's in Williamsburg, is also from a town called Satmar. And that's their, you know, and so their clothing and their hat and the way that they pull their white socks up to their knees and the way that they wear their black coat, that's just how everyone dressed in their town. And since, just like Amish people, they got frozen in time somehow, that's just what they wore 200 years ago in that town. And that's why there's such a big variety of a garb, which is like kind of similar, but not exactly similar.
I like that, sort of. But what about the beaver hat? Isn't the beaver hat special? Is that like for Shabbat or something?
Yeah, the tall. Yeah, that's right, because they're very expensive. And also in Judaism, there's this concept of wearing special for Sabbath and holidays. You know, like you have a special pair of shoes and you have a special garb that's different than the rest of the week, you know?
Okay, what about the sheets? You've never heard of the sheet thing either? This is just a big fucking myth?
No, I've heard of the sheet thing, but it's a myth.
It's just no one does the sheet. People are just fucking. They're doggy style fucking, it's all kinds of fucking, or there's just missionary. What do you think?
I'm probably going to go with missionary. I don't really know because, as Jewish boys or men, we learn everything about how to fuck right before you get married. They have these classes called chasen classes. Chasen is a groom in Hebrew. And they have kala classes, which are, you know, bride classes, they call them. And that's basically a group of, you know, 20 to 22-year-old boys and separately 18 to 20-year-old girls, who are basically sat down in a room by someone older and explained how to fuck and how to have sex and all that kind of shit.
Did you ever do that?
No, you see, I didn't do that, so I don't really know exactly what they tell them to do, you know? I didn't get that far in the program.
But, you know, just stuff a tallit in her mouth and go for it?
I mean, I think by now, like, their system has been so thoroughly corrupted. Like, for example, you know, in Crown Heights, I see the way people dress there now, and it's mind-blowing how far it's come in the last 20 years. Because when I was growing up, the women wore long sleeves, and they all wore long, you know, long skirts, and the married ones wore wigs, and you know, and now everyone's just like dressing like sluts, you know, and it's okay. And it has to do with the rabbi died and he didn't name a successor. So he, you know, so it's just chaos in that community.
It's chaos, yeah. The women are wearing like quarter-length sleeves. Do you think there's anything good that you've learned that you've taken away from yeshiva or, you know, or Israel or growing up within this family that you've used in, you know, creating your business or making your music, or, I mean, what's left? Is there any good that's left?
Yeah, but that goes back to the religious people like to think that they invented morality, you know? They like to think that if without religion, we'd all be, you know, killing each other and stealing each other's shit and raping each other, you know? No, they really want to think that Judaism came up with all these, oh, it's the original religion and it came up with morality and the Ten Commandments. Fuck you, put me on an island with 10 people. I'll come up with the same 7 commandments, the normal ones from them anyway. Yeah, don't steal shit, because I don't want anyone to steal shit from me, you know? Don't fucking kill anyone, because I don't want to get killed. Don't rape your fucking neighbor, because I don't want my daughter to get raped. Like, it's not brain fucking surgery, you know? I mean, Zoe, we could dedicate, you know, so much time on the absurdity and stupidity of this community, like...
how the fuck did you go from like not even know or like barely knowing a Barbie to amassing like a fucking enormous collection of, you know, some of the best music out there? I mean, what did you spend like years and years and years piling through records and going through? How did you even do that?
I left it and I worked my butt off, saved up some money. I met my partner, Gotti. We started exploring music together, and I just spent time catching up, and maybe there was some good about not having access to any of that stuff. I get to enjoy discovering things for the first time.
Right. You're like a virgin all the time.
All right, we found something nice that came out.
Oh, that's a good stopping point, I think. Zev, I really have and will continue to love you forever. I want everyone to know that they should check out his music. Well, how do I do it? Wolfandlamb.com? What is it?
Just Google.
No,
Wolfandlamb is our name. Crew Love is our crew, crewlove.us. And if you're in New York, check out the Marcy North. It's our underground venue that's a lot of fun. And I'll see you there.
No promises.
Love you, girl.
Bye. Love.
Traditions. Without our traditions, our lives would be as shaky as a fiddler on the roof.
Thank you to Zev, as always, for sharing his heart and his mind with us. You can follow him and all of his antics at wolfandlambmusic.com. You can follow me on my Twitter, @genuinelyfalse. I do live Periscope interviews from there as well. I have recently joined the dark side. I now have a Snapchat. My name is @DJKillinIt, no G. Yes, that was the best name I could come up with. I've got a YouTube page, my website, www.zoenightingale.com. I'm on Stitcher, I'm on SoundCloud, I'm on AudioTunes. Feel free to follow me wherever you want. Have a wonderful day. It is literally the most gorgeous day of all time here. Enjoy, everyone.